Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net.
Hannah, we've got a busier slate than usual. We've got a good six films. Mm-hmm. Batting lead off with a Marvel film and then a couple indies. A Palme d'Or winner, which you may or may not. You were just telling me how you kind of saw it in geometry form.
That's right.
But first, let's see if you can guess this evening's wine.
This evening's wine is Insurrection, a red blend. Thor, maybe?
It is Thor, because Thor's sister, we didn't know he had a sister, but turns out she's the goddess of death, returns to Asgard to foment insurrection.
Okay, I'll buy that.
It's better than last week's 1924.
Better than last year's, like, major stretch.
Well, let's go ahead. I want to just jump in about why Thor Ragnarok, I liked it, I didn't love it. I think you love it. It is the best reviewed film of any Marvel film yet made, which is shocking because I wasn't really looking forward to a Thor film.
Yeah.
But it's because, and I'll tell you why, in one sentence why, it's because it's directed by Taika Waititi. Yes. The Hunt for the Wilder People,
What We Do
in the Shadows, New Zealand Kiwi director.
He's one of my favorite new people. I mean, because he appears in it, too.
He's a voice.
His character is really funny, too. And I loved Hunt for the Wilder People. So I'd never heard of Taika Waititi before Wilder People. And now I'm all over it.
I always thought Thor was a stale character. I didn't like the first Thor. I didn't like Thor the Dark World. He's just... You know, he's a god.
He's a god.
And he's not, but he's never injured.
He's not just a god.
He's not awesome like Iron Man. He's not Captain America. He's Thor.
He's Thor.
But just because he's cute doesn't mean he carries films until Ragnarok, which is, they went in a different direction. They went funny. They went Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
They said, you know what? People like these snarky, funny Guardians of the Galaxy. Let's make Thor funny.
It's almost like a PG Deadpool. You know, with the type of humor that's in there. So I think that's also the comparison. So it's a bit of that Deadpool sensibility, Guardians of the Galaxy humor. And where I disagree, where this might be the best reviewed Marvel movie, it's not the best Marvel movie.
So I've heard people, Hamilton Whitney, have said Thor Ragnarok is the best Marvel film yet made.
And I am not.
It's not.
It is not.
But I think we disagree on what that is.
It's not the most... But it's the most fun.
Your
Marvel
favorite, I think,
movie.
Would be Civil War.
No. That was just from last year.
That made your top 10 list.
No, but I loved, I would put some of the other Avengers movies above that. Yeah, it made my top 10 last year for that one Avengers movie that was out that was just fun to watch. Those have more, there have been previous movies, they have more story that I think is deeper and plays for advancing the whole Marvel universe, you know, narrative. This one's just fun. And so what I liked about it is I think people are just in the mood for just pure escapist fun movie, but you do have to have seen, it's not the first, you can't walk in and enjoy Thor Ragnarok if you've never seen a Marvel movie.
You need to see Age of Ultron, otherwise the Hulk won't make any sense.
Right.
And you might need to see the first two Thors, but not really.
It helps to have seen Doctor Strange. It helps to have seen
Doctor Strange. It really
Thors.
Helps to have seen.
Yeah, and it helps to have seen previous Thor movies. I disagreed with you. I saw your review. You did not like you thought there was too much Loki.
Every movie, well, it's starting with the Avengers, and then just take your pick. Loki and Thor go at it. They're brothers, but they're, you know, Loki's an adopted brother, and they don't get, it's like This Is Us.
Yeah.
Randall and Kevin.
Yeah.
They don't get along.
But, yeah,
and it's, I'm tired now.
No,
I'm tired.
But there's a love there.
And you just know, great, that's more, there. This is another theme, this film. We're going to do more Thor and Loki.
No, I think it builds on the relationship that's already been established between Thor and Loki in the previous movies. And so to me, it's a progression, it's character development, it's reinforcing a storyline that we've all come to recognize and like. And so I thought, I loved the Thor-Loki interactions. And so there was not too much Loki in this for me. That I felt that there was a little more of it, and I thought the time had come for exploring that that sibling rivalry a little bit more. And what makes it most interesting now is that, you know, you've got this third sibling that suddenly shows up.
Well, people are saying, you know, it's so fresh and so creative. And I think people are saying that because there are interesting, revealing, intriguing new characters, new Marvel characters we've never seen before. So that's why I was saying Loki was dragging it down into that non-funny past. No. But now we've got this fresh blood. And the main fresh blood is Cate Blanchett.
Mm-hmm.
As the goddess of death, Hela, Odin's firstborn child who disappears even before Thor gets on the scene. That's how old she is. And she's back with a vengeance, and she's very mad. And she's Marvel's first lead female villain. We've seen secondary female villains in the past, especially in Guardians of the Galaxy 2. There are actually two of them. But here is the first lead. The number one bad person is a female, and she kind of looks like Maleficent.
Yeah.
She can summon swords whenever she wants, and she's more powerful than Thor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and she's pure evil. But she is played that really well by Cate Blanchett. I think that that was fun casting. But then you also have a new female lead in heroine, I suppose, in this Valkyrie, Tessa Thompson. And so she's another sort of kick-butt female character. And her introduction was kind of interesting. You didn't really know where that storyline was going. And she had a past interaction with Hela that brings her into the fold. And so I like her character too. So I think what was great, there's this great balance of fun characters in this film.
Well, the most oddball new character is the Grandmaster, played by Jeff Goldblum, and he runs a planet, the planet called Sakaar, where Thor becomes imprisoned. He can't even go back to Asgard yet and fight Hela until he gets free from Sakaar, where he's actually not a god anymore. He is mortal, almost, controlled by this, you know, it doesn't really matter, that's just plot stuff. But he's stuck on this planet, and he can't get off, and he's a gladiator. Think, what's his name from Gladiator?
Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe, thank you. He has to fight his way through the arena, and the Grandmaster is this odd, I don't want to compare him to, like, Bowie, because anyone who's odd and eccentric on film, people say, oh, he's like David Bowie. He's not. He's just, he's weird. He's a weird dude.
I compared him to, it was reminiscent of, is it Caesar Flickerman in The Hunger Games, who plays, like, does the color commentary?
Oh, yeah. The Stanley Tucci character.
Stanley Tucci's character. He had a little bit of that going for him. It was almost like this Hunger Games type of setting and putting these people, you know, into the ring to fight to the death kind of thing and being very flippant about the whole thing. And it's not a spoiler. I think everybody kind of knows now that essentially what happens is he ends up fighting the Hulk. So that's what brings the Hulk character back into play.
And that's the first time we ever really see the Hulk have coherent dialogue.
Yeah.
Like, he speaks. Thor, like, puny thunder. Hulk, like, big smoldering thunder.
Yes.
Or fire.
And then he's, you know, and then there's a period in which he's David Banner. And so Mark Ruffalo... Bruce Banner. No,
Bruce
David
Banner.
Banner.
Bruce Banner.
David Banner? I think it's David Banner.
Ooh.
Yeah, we're going to have to look that one up. I think it's David, isn't it?
I think it's Bruce.
Anyway, no, because Bruce is from Batman.
I'm not talking about Bruce Wayne.
Anyway.
Is it David Banner, really? Because I know the rapper David Banner.
Yeah, I'm envisioning the TV series with The Incredible Hulk. Oh, shut up. And I think that... yeah, I think it's David. We'll have to wager next week's
watch.
But the one
character I really hope comes back time and time again is Korg.
Yes.
Korg, the rock monster. He's a behemoth guy, but he's actually like the mother hen of gladiators.
He's
a gentle soul. He's a gentle giant, but he's made out of rock, and he's voiced by Taika Waititi, and he's just hysterical. He's got these one-liners. He calls Thor New Doug, and he...
Because
he's
old,
like,
Doug did, ran into
old
some
Doug
trouble.
Old Doug didn't make it. And, you know, I was gonna lead a revolution, but I didn't print enough pamphlets. And it's hysterical.
It is. That was definitely my favorite new character, and why I just think Taika Waititi must have had so much fun directing himself in this movie.
He stars or comes up in every movie he makes.
Yeah, and this movie, with I'm not going to spoil anything, but there are several fun cameos that, again, the more you know, Easter eggs you're willing to look for, the more you're going to find in this film. And so there were just inside jokes, character development. So again, not the best Marvel movie ever, but absolutely a very, very fun, entertaining flick.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. It's very fun. Now, our next film, you didn't see.
Yep.
And you're lucky.
Yes.
Because I saw A Bad Mom's Christmas. I did not like the first Bad Moms. It's just, you know, it was funny, but it's like, okay, I get it. These moms are tired of being moms, so they're going to drink alcohol now in slow montages. Well, now the slow montages are still here, and now they're saying, you know what, moms get put through the ringer in Christmas, so we're gonna take back Christmas, and they don't. The narrative twist, the plot twist, is that their moms, no notice them, all three of them on Christmas. So Mila Kunis is still here. Her mom is Christine Baranski, who's a perfectionist. Kristen Bell is still here, and her mom is Cheryl Hines, who is very too close. And Catherine Hahn is still here, and she's still the funniest one, and her mom is Susan Sarandon.
Oh, that's great.
Susan Sarandon, she plays this just terrible drop-in mother whenever I need money. And it's not funny. It's just terrible. How do you do Christmas right? What's the right way to do Christmas? The recurring joke is a six-year-old who keeps saying, "Oh, my effing God," like, straight up saying it, and it says it a couple times. It's like, okay, that's amusing, and it's just off-putting. I laughed two big times. Your boy Kevin from This Is Us shows up as a male stripper.
Ooh.
He goes to Catherine Hahn to get waxed, and they have a great waxing scene. He's really good in this, by the way. I don't know his name, but he's Kevin from This Is Us. And there's Wanda Sykes shows up as a cameo, as a therapist, and she's hysterical. She's like, you know why your mom is nuts? And she goes to tell her why children are just terrible people. And the crowd I was with, it was for that crowd. They were laughing hysterically. They were all moms. They were all snuck in white wine, you know, and it's just... poorly written.
You know, the last time when I saw it, remember it was a group of moms from some DC-based moms group that all got to go have cocktails and then go and see Bad Moms, the first one. And I remember that I was not particularly enamored with it. I thought it was, you know, it was funny enough, but they loved it. And so that's why Bad Moms 2.
Well, this came out surprisingly fast. We saw Bad Moms last year.
Right. So it came out fast because all those moms that left laughing and wanted, I think the studios were like, you know what, let's just roll another one out there before they forget.
The plot. They rehashed the same plot. They set it at a holiday now. They introduced some more characters. And the filmmakers, John Lucas and Scott Moore, guess what? Bad dads coming your way. Bad dads.
Well, and then how's that going to compare with Daddy's Home 2 coming out next week?
And it's going to fit in there with Bad Grandpa somehow.
That's right. That's right.
They go to a bounce house, one of those, you know, factory bounce houses with a whole bunch of trampolines.
Uh-huh.
And they actually put two montages in there. The same scene has two slow motion montage of people just breaking character and getting crazy in the bounce house.
Well, I suspect the same people that went and saw and enjoyed Bad Moms, even if this one isn't as good, they're still going to go and see the second one and enjoy it. Although, it might be split, because I honestly think a lot of those women should go see Thor Ragnarok instead.
They would have a better time.
They're going to have a much better time. I'm not surprised that Bad Moms 2, turning it out so quickly, it was not particularly good, and that's why I was not too disappointed to have missed it.
The next one was screened on Halloween, and I have parental responsibilities on Halloween, so I could not go see Woody Harrelson as LBJ. How did he do as President Johnson?
He is very good in the role. It takes a few minutes to get past the prosthetics. If you see the trailer or you see the commercials, you will notice that it doesn't look, at first glance, you would not expect it to be Woody Harrelson.
Some people called those prosthetics off-putting.
They were off-putting for the first 10 minutes, perhaps. Once you were into the film and the narrative and the story, you were kind of okay with it. And so because the performance was good and Rob Reiner directed this, I've never seen a bad Rob Reiner movie.
So, no, I'm trying to go through my head right now.
You know, you're never going to get a bad movie. So while this is not any, there's nothing earth-shattering or new, to me it was one of those very interesting but kind of flat movies. Very similar to, it was kind of like Jackie. So you're last year. So you're sort of watching this same time frame play out, but just from a different point of view. And so your perspective is now coming from LBJ's side of what's going on around him when he's being recruited to be JFK's running mate. And then the what's happening when JFK is assassinated, and then the other big thread is about the ultimate passage of the civil rights legislation, of the civil rights bill, and what LBJ had to do in the aftermath of JFK's death to really then use that leverage, wanting to protect JFK's legacy and getting that bill passed when it would have been probably a much tougher, longer sell if Kennedy hadn't been killed. And so it was just, it's just interesting. They intercut it with some newsreel footage. And so when you see things like the, when Walter Cronkite announced the death of Kennedy, that stuff still gets you. And you're seeing the real newsreel footage. And so that's when you're kind of reminded that this was real, that this happened in our history. And some people have really liked Jeffrey Donovan, the guy from Burn Notice. It plays JFK. And my issue sometimes with when people are playing somebody like JFK and Bobby Kennedy, that they do feel like caricatures, that they're almost overacting, because we all know exactly what these people looked and sounded like. And I felt that a little bit. Other people thought Jeffrey Donovan's performance was, you know, they really liked it. Overall, the whole thing to me felt like a, if you had an episode of The West Wing in the 1960s, that's kind of what it played like.
Well, I noticed it was short. Like, it was almost
89 minutes
of a West Wing episode.
Yes.
Now, from the outside, my impression could be totally wrong, but it seems cobbled together. Like, I saw a movie steal with him on the airplane taking the oath of office, and there's Jackie right next to him in that pink outfit. I was like, I just saw Jackie. Should be, how is that not Natalie Portman right now? Then we saw Selma, which a sub-theme of that was the passage of the Voting Rights Act, uh-huh, and how he had, you know, to balance factions in the Senate to be able to do that. So it seems, I don't know, like the combination of some different sums.
It is. And so that's why it's not a great movie. But for what it is, it's still very good. It keeps you engrossed because it is a tight 89 minutes. And you definitely get more of a sense of LBJ's character and his, you know, and his relationship with Lady Bird, who actually is played by, I think, Jason Jennifer Lee. You're just getting a different side of a very familiar story, and you feel that familiarity, which is why there's no dramatic spike. It's hard to really get emotionally invested or feel any drama when you know exactly how this whole thing plays out, but it's still really interesting to watch, and it moves. And so our friend Eileen was actually, went and saw this, and she said it was much better than she expected it to be. And so it's definitely a movie, you know, as we would call the movies for grown-ups crowd. It's going to appeal mostly to probably the older audience.
People that remember.
and again, Woody Harrelson, this has been such a phenomenal year for him. He has been in so many different roles in the past year, and he manages to kind of really transform himself. And this one, the physical transformation makes it most interesting. But all I kept thinking, even after seeing Woody Harrelson doing this incredible job as LBJ, is just thinking to when we talk about in the future, Three Billboards. I would still put that as sort of his awards-worthy role. And this
that's
one,
funny, because he's just a supporting character in
and,
that.
Yeah.
And here he is, the LBJ.
But I got so much, I just thought it was... the package for Three Billboards is so much more powerful, and his supporting role is so much more powerful in that. This is just an interesting movie that I think if you liked Jackie and you just like studying that time period and it's of interest to you, then this one's not going to, you're not going to not like it. Like, nobody's going to come out of LBJ and think that was a bad movie.
Well,
They're just not.
I have no particular fascination with that era. Don't remember it. Wasn't there. But I love Jackie.
Well, then I think you'd like LBJ. You know, I don't think you'd love it because
seems like,
it's because you just feel like you've seen all the elements of this movie somewhere before at some point in time. But it that doesn't take away from the fact that it's well done for what it is. It's not one where I don't think anybody has to run out and see it. And I don't think it will quite reach to the level of like an awards type of movie.
Very well. Our next film is Novitiate. And I saw it at Middleburg. You caught it a little bit later. And it's actually a Sundance product. The first time feature film director Margaret Betts, goes by Maggie Betts, won the Sundance Award for Breakout Director. And I really took a liking to this film, even though I have no connection with it. My boss today asked me, hey, have you heard about this film called Novitiate? And he is a devout Catholic. And I said, yeah, I've actually seen it. And he said, well, is it anti-Catholic? It's like, no, it doesn't take sides. It tells a story. Specifically, Maggie Betts was interested in Vatican II. And since she was interested in what happened in the reforms of Vatican II, it's set in the mid-60s, following a pack of very young girls, like just out of high school, who choose to go through nun training. And we learn all those words. They're postulants. They're going to join the novitiate. These fun little words. And it's about, oddly enough, it's about romantic love. But it's romantic love about the ultimate boy. Not the boy next door, but the boy up above.
The big JC.
You see our main novice, Sister Kathleen. She's played by Margaret Qualley. In a minute, I will ask you whose daughter she is, who I learned. Oh my gosh. We follow Sister Kathleen. We see her have a calling in sanctuary. She's not from a religious family. She just realizes she feels really at home in the Catholic Church. She enters the sisterhood there, run by a very stern, very disciplinarian Reverend Mother, played by Melissa Leo. And we watch what these girls go through. It's not positive. It's not negative. Once again, Betts does not take sides. She's just telling a story. And Hannah, I connected with this film a little bit. I liked it.
It's an art house movie. It's definitely for the arty crowd. It's just not a movie that really had anything that I found particularly of interest. So I think you'd have to really want to go see this movie about, you know, nuns and how they, I mean, I learned a little bit about, I certainly didn't know all the various steps of the novitiate and how you take like these, you take the first vows and then you get trained. Then you go through this training period to decide if you're going to really take the next step. The only character, the one I really just thought was amazing, Melissa Leo was very good as Mother Superior, because she's kind of this, a little bitter at, she's very bitter at what the Vatican is trying to do. You know, she's been a nun for 40 plus years. And she thinks that everything is, that the church is perfect the way it is, the Catholic Church. And so this attempt to modernize and reform, it just absolutely mortifies her. And she's very slow to accept these new roles and to let the latest crop of nun trainees in on what these new roles would allow them to do. And so Melissa Leo's role was pretty good. And the mom, who played the mother?
That's Julianne Nicholson.
So she was...
She was in Black Mass, remember, about White, Whitey Bulger. Johnny Depp was Whitey Bulger.
Yeah, so she was very good. So she has kind of one of those small supporting roles, but that every time she comes on screen, you really...
See, I'm surprised you picked Julianne Nicholson. I thought you were going to say what I thought was the best role in the film was Sister Evelyn, little Sister Evelyn. It's played by Morgan Saylor. She is the poor nun who went first in the chapter of faults. They're all in a semicircle around the Reverend Mother late at night, and they take turns. And she had to crawl on their knees to the center of the circle, and they had to confess their sins. This is why I'm not worthy of God's love. And she went first. I didn't notice it, but it's a 13-minute take. It's unedited. Wow. Of her saying, you know, she started with, well, I lack concentration sometimes. Oh, right. And then Reverend Mother's like, that's not a sin. She's like, I'm going to get to the bottom. And 13 minutes, she's tore this poor girl apart. And she's really good. Morgan Saylor is her name. And she was astonishing in that scene.
She's very good. But what took me out of this idea that these truly are nuns in training.
They're gorgeous.
They're wearing freaking makeup. They I'm sorry.
The most gorgeous nuns I've ever seen.
The opening scenes, I'm like, they're all wearing. There's
Julie
lipstick.
Andrews wouldn't make the cast.
No.
She's not good looking enough.
I was, well, no, but I was like, no, that's a little too, they're all a little too gorgeous wearing these, you know, wearing their habits and with their hair back. And I had a hard time buying into that, but also because one of the other main nun characters was Sister Mary Grace.
Diana Agron.
And I spent the first 15 minutes of this film going, where do I know her from?
She's Quinn Fabre.
Quinn from Glee.
From Glee.
From
she's
Glee.
Quinn Fabre.
The blonde cheerleader from Glee. And I was like, okay, now that I knew, once I realized that, I could not get past like watching her and thinking, it's the chick from Glee. Is she going to like suddenly break into song? I don't know.
Well, she has a smaller role than you think. But an important
but
one.
It's an important one, and I mean, it's probably R-rated. It's Mike.
It is because particular reason. But
no, there is a reason. I mean, there are because there is the sexuality theme.
But she treaded the line there so well. It's like she says, I didn't want to make this, you know, some teenage boy's lesbian nun fantasy. And it's not.
It's not. But you also still know what's going on in the privacy of their bedrooms.
But it actually is a love story. But it's their love relationship with their idea of God.
But there's a hint of a love relationship blooming between women.
Was that real or was that out of necessity?
I don't know. And this does leave a lot open to interpretation, and the very end is left open to some interpretation. So I don't have any problems with the film. I just don't. I know that anybody that is into going to an escapist movie and a fun movie like a Thor or an LBJ for what that is, this is definitely a much more narrow audience. And I would say if you have some interest in the novitiate and the Catholic Church and what was happening around the era of Vatican II, I found it interesting. I was watching LBJ and novitiate
place in the same year.
They take place at the exact same time, and yet you would never put those two things together. So, you know, I think the mainstream audience, if they're going to pick something from the early 60s, are going to want to see Woody Harrelson and LBJ. The art house crowd might be more inclined to go see Novitiate.
Now I wish I had seen LBJ just so I could tell you firmly that Novitiate would probably be the better film.
It's not. It's better for you, and LBJ is better for me.
I like how you put that.
There you go.
All right. Now let's get back to Margaret Qualley, Sister Kathleen, our main character. She is a famous actress's daughter.
Do I get a hint?
And she kind of looks like her.
She looked like somebody, and I couldn't put my finger on it.
Does she look like Andy McDowell?
The lips. See, where I was thinking that she had on a lot of lipstick, Andy McDowell does all those makeup commercials.
Yeah, she is one of those. So I don't know if she's Revlon or something.
So she does, yeah. But so who's her father?
I don't know. Mr.
McDowell Qualley.
No, they do look alike a little bit, especially that Four Weddings and a Funeral, Andy McDowell.
Yeah, no, I kept
sex
thinking.
Sex Lies and Videotape.
And when I'm glad you said that because I wrote down her name and I was like, I don't recall her in anything, and I don't know her name, but I felt like I'd seen her before.
It's her first lead role.
But when I felt like I'd seen her before, it's very possible that I was kind of superimposing a young Andy McDowell on that face because she really does. Yeah, now that you mention it, she does look a lot like her. So if you are a huge Andy McDowell fan,
you
might want to go catch this movie just to see what her daughter looks like.
All right, our next film. I can't wait to hear your excuse, but The Square, a Palme d'Or winner. That means it was the number one film at the very prestigious, very competitive Cannes Film Festival. And it's by a Swedish director, Ruben Östlund. I think you might have seen another one of his films from 2014 called Force Majeure. That was the DC Area Film Critics' best foreign film of that year. Not my best.
Not my
best. But they voted it number one, and it didn't even make, it wasn't even nominated for an Oscar. It was shortlisted. It didn't get nominated, and there's a wonderful, he did it on purpose, kind of like a viral video of Ruben Östlund saying, the title of the video is What Happens When the Director Doesn't Get Nominated for an Oscar. But here, all right, big award winner. So this must be an amazing, weighty, because films that win the Palme d'Or are, you know, they mean something, and they're deep, and they're hard, and this one is quirky?
Yeah, but quirky in a way, and I did tune out. It was, what, 2.5 hours at least?
Tune out. How long did you make it?
It reminded me of how everyone raved about Tony Erdmann last year, and then I started watching it, and it was insanely long, and I just didn't particularly enjoy it. I felt the same way about The Square. I mean, I heard all these people talk about it. It had won the Palme d'Or. I felt compelled to watch it. I actually thought I was going to enjoy it. I went in with a totally open mind, despite the running time. And about an hour into it, I just kept thinking to myself, I get what they're trying to do, and they're trying to be very, it's kind of satire, I guess.
Well, it's easy. They're making fun of the contemporary modern art world. They're poking fun at them. And they call it, a lot of people call it, it's a comedy. It's so rare a comedy wins the Palme d'Or. It's not
a comedy.
It's comedy, but it's not comedy haha. It's comedy awkward. It's that awkward, like Larry David Curb Your Enthusiasm awkward comedy.
Yeah, wry humor and wry and dry.
And it's blatantly poking fun at modern art. The main piece project at the Stockholm Swedish Art Museum is called Mirrors and Piles of Gravel. And it is, they're poking fun at it. And the main character, his name's Christian. He's played by Clay S. Bong. We follow him. And he's kind of a metro guy. He's not a very nice guy. He gets robbed very early on. Then we see these series of vignettes about how he tries to get his stuff back and how that kind of blows up in his face. Elizabeth Moss pops up as an American journalist, and she's close to, you know, poking through the facade, like, you have all these words, but you don't know what they mean. But the one scene that you didn't even see, that everyone's going to talk about, that made, like, the movie poster, that the only people are going to talk about this, is the dinner party scene with, the actor's name is Terry Notary. He plays one of the apes in Planet of the Apes. He played Kong in Skull Island. He's one of those, you know, digital motion capture actors. And here he plays an artist who, you know, plays an ape. And this highbrow hoity-toity room of critics and fundraisers and millionaires is warned, hey, he's going to act like an ape. So you behave like you would around an ape. Eyes forward, don't move, blah, blah. And it's such an amazing scene of what happens. It's like a good 10-minute, 15-minute scene of him tearing apart this dinner party. Dominic West is in that room. Remember him from The Wire? He was McNulty from The Wire. That's the scene of the film. So I almost implore you just to go back, find that 15-minute scene. Because that's the scene of the film that everyone will talk about.
Did they need the other 2 hours and 25 minutes?
I understand that The Square, I agree that it is creative, it's original, it pushes boundaries, but meh. Well, like, I wasn't feeling it either.
Well, that's just it. I mean, I look at the slate of films that we saw this week, and to me, it's another one that is strictly for the art house crowd. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, the people, obviously, who voted it for the Palme d'Or appreciated what it was going for. I just think, to me, I just, after an hour, I was like, I just really don't like it enough to keep watching. I just wasn't invested, and
I love
just
your
didn't care.
Tony Erdmann comparison. Tony Erdmann received critical raves. People love this movie. Not just best foreign film. People wanted this for best picture. It's being remade already in America. And I couldn't stand Tony Erdmann. I hated everything about it.
I was bored, and then it was weird, and I didn't get it. And they called that one a comedy, too. And I was like, this is
not
a comedy. And what language is this? This is in Swedish with English subtitles, except for when
Elizabeth
Moss is talking once in a while. But so you've got that compounding sort of,
Dominic West was a visiting artist, and there's a guy with Tourette's in the audience. And so every time he says something, the guy with Tourette's says something just horrible. And I guess that's the comedy. Like, what do you do if there's a Tourette's guy in your audience? And they're being very modern. Like, oh, he has every right to be here as anybody else. But he is straight up, does he have Tourette's or is he just yelling at the artist? You don't know. And that's their idea of comedy.
Right. And to me, that just isn't funny and not what I want to spend my time on when there's so many there are really good movies coming out and coming down the pike. And that the square doesn't fit into the circle of my film choices.
No, that reminds me. Already this year, there's The Square and The Circle. If you remember Tom Hanks and Emma Watson in The Circle.
Oh. Well, I said I watched half of The Square, which meant I watched a rectangle.
Yeah, I'm eye-rolling on a podcast. All right, a final film you did not see because it was close to 2.5 hours.
And
it's in Japanese.
Awful.
Oh, no. Blade of the Immortal.
It sounds awful.
100th film. By Takashi Miike.
Oh, and how many of that? There's 100 of I see.
And he's not old. Like, he's not an old man. This is his 100th film. It was also at Cannes. It played in the out-of-competition category, but it's still prestigious to be there. It was at Cannes as well, the same this year with The Square. And it's about a samurai. It's based on a manga, a very popular manga series in Japan. And it's about a samurai. And early on, when it's black and white, he murders about 100 samurai protecting his sister. Sister dies. He's just about on the verge of death. And an old woman comes by and puts bloodworms into his body, making him immortal. You stab him, the worms will just put him back together. He's kind of just, he doesn't have blood anymore, he has bloodworms. And he becomes this, protector, bodyguard of a young girl who needs revenge after the bad people kill her father. And it's the last scene, it must be 2 to 3 people versus about 1,000 samurai. It's the most intense, long fighting. And this film is almost all fighting. There's a lot of samurai swordplay going on here. The main guy is played by Takuya Kimura. He's a former boy band guy. And he looks like, but he's got a lot of scars on his face because, the bloodworms will put your arm back on, but they won't, heal your scars.
Uh-huh.
And the little girl is Hana Sugisaki.
Well, at least her first name's good.
And there's just baths of blood. There's an obscene body count. I had a good time.
I'm sure you did. And I looked at the poster, and the poster reminded me of The Villainous that we saw a few weeks back. And I was like, I don't need...
Which is just as bloody.
Right. And I was like, I've already fulfilled my quota for random violent foreign films that Charlie likes to see.
Oddly
and
enough,
I skipped this one.
Blade of the Immortal is actually not as ridiculous as The Villainous was. There was that just got ridiculous at parts. About how I don't even want to go back to that movie. But most Americans will know Takashi Miike from 13 Assassins. That came out in 2010 or 2011. But yeah, Blade of the Immortal. Check it out. If you just like samurai films or Japanese films, it's not a bad film. I didn't love it.
Why?
You know what?
Who and why?
You keep saying, this is an art house film. It's for the art house. This is an art house slasher film.
Okay, yeah. So you need to be a fan of the slasher film genre and maybe have seen at least one of the other 99 films that this guy made.
Isn't that something?
It's 100. It's amazing that I've managed to somehow miss 100 out of 100. So.
And if you went to Cannes, you could have seen it.
No, because if I was at Cannes, I would have been like, oh my gosh, this Faces Places movie that's playing over here is really good. And that had a special screening at Cannes. So I would say that if you still haven't seen Faces Places and you want a good French art house film, that's the one to go see.
That's
not
your
a
plug
slasher
in this
movie.
Actually,
not a slasher movie.
Oh, it's just, it has as much right to be in the theater as LBJ.
No, oh, please.
It has much right. There are many people that are interested in seeing another take about a 60s politician.
You're telling
than
there me
are
there
with
are
samurai.
As many people in the U.S.? I mean, internationally, I can say,
they're
maybe,
all in their 20s.
But I still think that they're all going to go see Thor. I'm sorry. Those people, all those guys in their 20s are going to go see
Thor. Because the people
Thor
that really
weekend.
Remember LBJ taking the oath of office and all that, they were teenagers.
Yeah, no, the LBJ is going to go skew for the older crowd. Absolutely. But I can't imagine... When the numbers roll in, granted, LBJ's in all these theaters.
Yeah, it's like we can't compare
numbers.
And the
slasher film is not.
And a slasher film's just the wrong... It's a samurai action bloody film.
And hey, if that's your thing, who am I?
It's no worse than Quentin Tarantino whatever.
Yeah, but I just... Yeah, this is one of those weeks where I go, you have the mainstream films and you have your art house films.
I guarantee you, Blade split. Of the Immortal is better than A Bad Mom's Christmas, and you would go see A Bad Mom's Christmas over this, I think.
Yes, you are correct.
Even though I bet you would agree this is better than A Bad Mom's Christmas.
No, because I still would never watch it to be able to compare the two.
All right. Recapping. We started way back there with the new Marvel movie, Thor Ragnarok. It's funny. It's not the greatest, but I love some of the new characters.
It's marvelously entertaining.
LBJ.
LBJ is interesting and better than you might expect. And certainly a decent choice if you just are looking for sort of a political drama. Beyond that, can you wait and catch it on streaming on Netflix or something? Absolutely. It's not a must-see. I don't think it's going to break through and become awards caliber. At least I don't think it deserves to.
A Bad Mom's Christmas is terrible.
What can I say? I'm just not surprised at all, but maybe I'd catch it like on regular commercial television or on an airplane sometime. And I do think that the same people who saw and liked Bad Moms are going to go see this one regardless.
Novitiate. I liked it better than you did. And it really is a thoughtful film about a select group of girls who are naturally have more romantic extremist personalities than other people.
I personally would rather see Sound of Music for the 3,000th time.
The exact opposite is Sister Act. Whoopi Goldberg's nuns are nothing like these nuns.
Go see Julie Andrews.
The Square. If you have to see what movie wins the Palme d'Or every year, then you have to see this movie.
Yeah, and if not, don't.
And we're in the minority.
Yeah,
people will be loving this film.
Arty people are going to be loving this film, but I do think
mirrors and piles of gravel.
I think when you consider the majority as being people beyond the critics' world, I think the majority of people are not going to be as enamored with this film as the critics seem to be.
Blade of the Immortal. There's a lot of Blade, I'll tell you.
There's
that.
A lot of Blade, a lot of blood.
A lot of blood.
Not my thing.
Yeah, like just about, and I mean just almost everybody of the 2,000 people you see on the screen dies.
What more could you possibly want for a feel-good film of the year?
Well, you're always talking about it. If you need to feel good. You need to feel good. You know what? Not every film has to be a feel-good film of the year.
These are not all feel-goods, but Thor's like a fun feel-good. LBJ's not a feel-good
film. The only one you really liked today was Thor, and that's a feel-good movie.
It's a feel-good, fun flick, and I think we're at a time in our world right now where that's the kind of movie that the majority of people want to see. I think you need a little escapist fun fare out there, and Thor delivers that.
I know nothing. I do not identify with nuns, so that's my escapism. Like, what do I identify with
you
nuns?
You want to escape to the convent, Charlie. I mean, you know, I just didn't see the appeal. But
what did you prefer, Novitiate or the Littlest Hours? You remember that?
Yeah. No, I actually think I thought
Aubrey Plaza and Alison Brie.
To me, Novitiate was the better film than The Littlest Hours. That one was just weird.
All right. On behalf of the Cinema Clash, thank you for listening. I am Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend at RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.